Hello and welcome to another edition of the Moving Iron Podcast. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for almost 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Axon was started almost 100 years ago out of a passion for keeping agriculture moving. It's that same passion that drives them today. With a vision for a better experience for both farmer and dealer, they set out to create a better way to move more iron. When you partner with Axon, you get immediate access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. Axon carries all major brands and sizes of tires, wheels, and tracks. From custom colors and sizes to fully customized wheels, you can have the solution for virtually any problem today's farmer is trying to solve. To find more or become an Axon dealer, please visit axontire.com. Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find us here, Moving Iron. Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 220. This edition of the Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by Axon Tire, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. For more information, go to axontire.com. And while you're there, use the code word Combine Kit, and you'll get 3% off of a set of Alliance Combine tires and rims. So when you head into harvest, you got super good traction. Also, go to Tractor Zoom, and you'll find Iron Comps there, which is a great place to really dive into what's going on in the auction market. And there's plenty of stuff to pay attention to here, especially with the amount of equipment that we see moving all over the place. So with that, I've got my good friend Aaron Fennell. How you doing, bud?
Average friend Aaron Fennell is doing pretty good. Yeah. Easy on the good.
Yeah, you are average. That is no doubt about that.
Just kidding. We're BFFs.
Just joshing you.
We even have the half-heart necklaces.
Yeah, we do.
Casey just won't ever wear his. He's too big of a jerk.
I've got moving on my arm, and he's got iron on his other. That way we're
sitting there. We flex, and it says podcast.
Podcast all together. It's nice. Come together nice.
Good thing you have moving, and I have iron.
But... No, nonetheless, this has been it's been a while since we've had a podcast where we just kind of talked about what was going on without a bunch of numbers thrown in there. So I thought,
thank God,
this might be everybody. This might be a good one to do that. And we thought since we are in that first phase of cutting hay, whether it's alfalfa hay or whether it's prairie hay or whatever it is that you're cutting out there, might be a good time to just talk about what's going on in the hay market.
So absolutely,
Aaron is a How do you say this? Are you a rural lifestylist when it comes to haying? Is that an easy way to put that?
Previously we were classified as rural lifestylists. Now we are actual custom hay.
Oh, look at that.
Operation.
You have a hay monster?
No, we use the tractor-sized bales.
Oh, okay, I'm tracking. I got you. All right.
No, we're full bore custom swathing, custom baling.
Right on.
Yeah, it's a good idea when you have livestock and a full-time job. Why not?
Yeah, why not do some haying?
That's why what not? I would say. So, yeah.
When the sun is shining, you got to make hay.
That's
you
know right. Make hay while the sun is shining.
You know what I'm saying? All right. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So right now, obviously, hay is just about like everything else out there. There's not much of it anywhere to be had. The good stuff, anyway.
Correct.
The stuff that you want. There's still some, you know, 535s and 530s laying out there. I'm sure.
Discount a 535, man. Sucker will make a 2,000-pound bale.
I like those because you can roll back the bell count.
And feel yeah. You know? How many bales are on it? Well, 5,000.
Well, last time year. I checked. Let me check the notebook real quick.
Yeah, just watch those little wheels and make sure you're in the middle.
But so right now, but it seems like a lot of the traditional round bale buyer that we've had for the longest time. I mean, big square bales aren't anything new to the market. They've been around forever. Heston's made a big square baler for 50 years, I think. I mean, it's been around forever since the 80s.
40.
You know, so I mean, it's been around there for quite a while. So it's nothing new, but it seems like as operations get bigger, less and less round bales, and more big square bales are starting to kind of creep into that market share.
Trucking.
And that's exactly right. You know, so now you're starting to look at a machine where you can have a 3x4 or a 4x4, something like that, which is very easily divisible by 53 or whatever number that you're throwing out there. And you can get a more uniform stack on there without having, you know, some like pyramid puzzle thing that you got to put together when you're doing it. So
110 billion ratchet straps.
Yeah.
Or you got to build the pipe rack so you can haul them round side out.
Yeah.
And then only use 9 billion ratchet straps.
Yeah. So nonetheless, so you start to see more of the big square balers kind of come into play.
The big, massive guys, that's all.
Yeah.
They wouldn't dream of a round bale, man.
Right. Yeah. Especially like your dairies, your feedlots, those kind of guys like that are putting up big squares, right?
Yep.
It's a bigger thing they're doing. So kind of when you're looking at stuff right now and you're looking around, what are you seeing most out there? Like where is that value point at right now on a big square baler?
Like what, when should he trade or when is the best time to buy a used one?
I think I'm looking at like, it's not uncommon to see a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old big square baler with 50 or 60,000 bales.
Right.
Right. That's not uncommon. Right? That's
typically, here's what I would say. If you're a buyer, stay under 20.
Okay.
If you are the guy trading it off, these guys all know that. Square balers have a magic number. It's 30,000 bales. At 30,000 bales, you don't want the repair bill. Mm-hmm. It's time to jump. Those guys all know that. 25 to 30, typically. It's going to depend where you're at, conditions, all that kind of stuff. Right. Obviously, out here, we're going to pick in a little more sand.
Right.
But we're dealing with very nice, beautiful, dry crop, whereas the guys in the east, they're not going to get, you know, any soil, dirt, whatever, into the hay like we might.
Yep.
But it's always tough. It's always tougher hay just because of the humidity.
Yeah.
If I was a buyer, I would want to be under 20, but there's also a big gap in price between that under 20 or the over 30. If you can find that over 30, maybe like a 30, 35, mm-hmm. and it's had 30 spent on it, 20 spent on it, that is a good baler.
Right.
It's ready for the next 30, you know? And that's how I would kind of see it is, The new buyer guy is probably going to run it to 25 or 30. The next guy gets it. He's had his – he bought it after the giant ass repair bill. He's going to run it that far. Mm-hmm. And then he might keep it kind of, for lack of a better word, patched together.
Right.
And then it might – or he might punch out of it, and then it falls to bottom feeders like me.
Right.
But you know what's funny? We're talking about trucking. Right, that is the number one thing that's driven the big square market. It's not because they're easier to feed or easier to handle. They're a pain in the ass, but there's way less of them. That's the beauty of it. The thing to me that and this is all 100% driven off trucking. The farmer producer who has a baler, they love 4x4s. It's that much less. Mm-hmm. Why would you want more bales? You know, it's a 4x4 is the modern day Heston stack,
right?
You know,
yeah,
right, or the old John Deere 200 stacker.
Yep,
the modern day stacker is, or the modern day 4x4 is that.
Yeah,
but you fit two rows of 4x4s on a semi, three rows of 3x4s.
Right,
that is what drives the 3x4 being the main baler in the greater hay area.
Right.
There are pockets of eastern Iowa, parts of the I states, mm-hmm. and the upper Midwest where the 3x3 is very popular.
Right.
We could not give one of those away out here. Mm-hmm. They'd rather have a 3-string big square bale than or small square bale than a 3x3 big square. Which, case in point, that's why certain companies don't even make a 4x4.
Right.
Cronin Heston is it. Heston, that was what they invented, was the 4x4.
Yeah.
The old 4800, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So,
where?
it's funny to me when we get, say, that, I'll just use the 30, the 30,000 bale baler. When we get a 4x4 that size, it's gone.
Right.
because an end user buys it because he's got a 4910 mm-hmm. or a 4900, and that thing's shot, man. It's got 80,000 bales on it. Throw it on big iron, and right. we'll go get this 2290 Heston or whatever and yeah. go that route. 3x4s take longer, but as guys... Now, we're going to see a shift in that because right. as corn went from $11 billion to a penny
right.
over the last 5 years, there's guys who, well, we got to diversify, you know, we got to get, and it's mostly guys not in the corn region, right? Not in the corn belt mm-hmm. that the fringe acres, they right. call it. Those guys have put in more hay, you know, during that time. Mm-hmm. And it's funny if it was for mostly for them or kind of like what I would call local within the county, next county,
right.
that is still pretty much 4x4. If you have guys that are, we put in, we took out two circles, we turned them to alfalfa, we really like this, we're going to do a couple more, that's a 3x4 guy. Yeah. He probably bought the 4x4. Now he's doing the math and tons per truck and all this, and kind of just went, you know, if he went from 1 to 3 or 2 to 4, they ramp that up, mindset changes, and it's production of the product to sell just like crops.
Right.
And yep. at that point, that's when you get guys calling for the 15,000 bale 3x4, the 20,000 bale 3x4, yep. that kind of thing. Yep. So.
Yep.
And then we have, you know, as you know, we are just king of round bale country, you know, no question.
Right.
Everything east of 385 is round bale.
Right.
All the way to the next area code.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the number of round balers that get sold out here are it's quite mind-blowing how much that is. But so let's shift over here. So before you can bale the hay, you gotta go out and swath it. You gotta go out and cut that thing. So seeing some movement in, obviously, the self-propelled swather is very much a mainstay. But the one thing that I've found that has gotten a lot of attention over the last 2 or 3 years is the idea of taking a tractor and putting one of those triple mount
right.
or a double mount type rear mount swathing, you know, conditioner type thing on there, because it gives some guys some versatility, right?
Right.
You've got a tractor that's going to do multiple things. You have your baling tractor that's also your swathing tractor, that's also your whatever tractor, you know, so on and so forth, all the way down the line. And a lot of these guys are using, you know, a 300-horsepower tractor. They're using a 350-horsepower tractor. So not only is that tractor going to work in all those things I just talked about, but you're also talking about tillage, you're also talking about planting, you're also talking about a lot of other things that are going to start playing into that. And it seems like, especially when you get into areas where chopping hay for haylage, you know,
right.
Laying down hay for haylage, those machines obviously are a way bigger draw.
Right. The chopping guys are the ones who love the triple mower.
Yeah.
They can go out there with 300 horse and 30 foot and 15 mile an hour
yep.
and eat anything they want to eat. And then their 1,000 horsepower chopper mm-hmm. is behind the merger mm-hmm. and they can just take on the world in yep. the blink of an eye.
Yep. And so I think that to me, I mean, when I'm talking with customers about that particular unit, yeah, it's expensive because you're factoring the cost of a...
You have a 300-horse tractor in right. there.
You're factoring that in there. But if you take the tractor out of the mix and you're just looking at the rear mount mower and the front mount mower and you add those two together, you're still cheaper than a self-propelled
chopper. Oh, yeah. Say you have 5 to 10-year-old machinery.
Right.
Okay. You trade in your main hay tractor
right.
and you trade in your self-propelled swather. And guys don't look at it that way. Well, I got to trade my swather, and it's worth $80,000, and this other deal's like $400,000. Right. Well, it is, but you're getting a tractor that you've never even thought about owning before.
Right.
That's part of it. And by the way, that tractor will do anything else all the other tractors right. on the farm will.
Yep. The nice thing about that particular tractor, one thing that I've got, especially guys that have more of a livestock situation,
right.
is that... That front 3-point PTO gives you a lot of versatility that you wouldn't normally have.
You're exactly right. You know? There's not much in the crop world that that does you any good with. Right. And that's not what the tractor's made for. Exactly. It's not for the corn and soybean guy, man. Right. It's not for the wheat guy.
Right.
It's for livestock producers,
right.
feed production.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
And that's, you know, Pete, a lot of, and even me as a salesman, I don't look at it that way sometimes, you know. Like, well, when we do our used tractor forecasting and whatnot and be like, well, we need a couple front PTO and 3-point, but we want row crop tires on them because that, you know, helps resell it, whatever. And it does. That helps you where you can sell it to that guy who doesn't give a shit what's on the front of it, right. which is the whole point of that tractor.
Right.
But your livestock guy don't. He wants the floats.
He wants 650s or 800s or something like that.
You know? So you kind of got to – that's why we elect to go like 480 duals instead. That way you can do – you got flexibility.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I find, and this is really kind of the novelty of that tractor, is that the Degelmann blade, the Grauser blade, or whatever it is that you would typically put on a smaller row crop tractor to go clean pins and those kind of things – That 3-point in the front gives you that ability to get that 3-point blade. And then you don't have to fight the stupid, you know, frame and everything else all the time, taking it on and off, or it's on your way or whatever else.
Yep.
You set that thing down and you're good. And it's a tighter package.
Right.
So you can really get into corners a lot better.
Exactly.
Than what you can with there. And you still get the same.
You have a third of the, you're at a third less wheelbase.
Right.
In that
and
big
you still have the
R.
flexibility of having the 6-way blade and this, that, and the other thing, you know. So you can really make that thing work. But also the other thing, too, is on the front of that tractor is that now when you're in that livestock situation or whatever you're doing, you don't have to necessarily, where you have maybe your auger at, is no longer that big of a deal because you can pull in or back up to hook up to it.
Yep.
You can load trucks faster in and out of the – load and unload trucks faster in and out of that. And also just the ability to do whatever your grinding situation looks like.
Right,
you know what I mean? You have a lot more versatility when you come in there. So I think when people look at those – that particular rig, I mean, I think there's some opportunities there that are often overlooked in North America, whereas in like Europe, that's the mainstay.
They wouldn't even look at it. Like, self-propelled. They'd be why do we want that?
Why would you not put a PTO and 3-point on the front of your tractor? You know, those kind of things. Whereas like the good old-fashioned New Holland bidirectional, which was kind of like that first introduction to the United States and North America for
versatility.
Here's a tractor that. Truly, it goes both ways.
Yeah. Oh.
Hey-o. Hey-o. but they have the that functionality of what that looks like and what you're doing and how those things work. I think, to me, as more of this vertical integration becomes into some of these bigger operations where cattle is and they're not buying as much forage, they're not buying as much hay, and they're looking at going like, okay, well, now I'm going to take these, you know, these 10 pivots over here, and that's going to be my alfalfa patch or whatever.
Right.
These 10 pivots over here are going to be what I'm going to cut for forage and those kind of things. That particular tractor is going to have, I think, more of a draw into that hay integration as you look at that.
Absolutely.
Now, flip it back here and let's just talk about your various windrowers. You know, so you got your rotary cutter. And the rotary cutter has actually taken a huge chunk of market share away from your traditional sickle machine.
95%.
Yeah, so it's made a big difference. Now, it also gives you, you know, you're talking a 14 or a 16 foot head. There's still a place for that sickle machine.
There absolutely is, in that
situation.
I will speak high, loud, and proud that yes, if you are a predominant grass hay man, do not buy a rotary. And let me rephrase that. Unless you're in the central or eastern time zone. If you're in the western time zone, do not go into grass hay, a grass meadow, with a disc mower.
It'll do.
Unless you don't really want a bunch of it.
Right. It'll make it disappear real quick.
Yep. It'll blow it down. And if you have short hay, you know, if you have like one of them lush mountain meadows that's like nipple high on me, I'm 6'6".
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go out there with your WT-35 and be done in 10 seconds. But for the common man, doing light grass hay, the sickle is just supreme.
Yep. One thing I will say about some of these draper heads, like the 30-foot drapers and stuff like that you can put on there, when they have side discharge, something like that, those, again, those are another great machine when it comes into the forge side of it.
Right. Absolutely. Which we use those. We have those all over in this area for milling.
Yep.
And I've always thought that, you know, a guy ought to go out there. Of course, the thing you got to remember, if it's a chop crop, it's very heavy.
Yep.
More often than not. And you're going to know that every inch of that 30 feet is on the front of you. Right. Trying to keep the draper running.
Right.
You know, when it gets that big and heavy.
Yep.
Because you're a moist growing crop. It's different than the millet thing.
Right.
Well, millet's 6 inches tall, but
canola,
great big crop, swathed with drapers, but it's at a different life stage than irrigated alfalfa.
Exactly.
You know, or irrigated triticale.
Yep.
You know,
something like that. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So now you've got all those things there, and we've kind of hit on here a little bit, but. You can't talk about hay without talking about forge, right? So you got these choppers that are out there right now. And the choppers are running. You know, we're doing that pickup phase of haylage here, that early, you know, whether they're cutting rye or whatever it is that they're doing, you know, they're laying that stuff down right now and they're really getting after it. But that's the one machine that, unlike combines, there's not a lot of folks out there that are venturing past that, you know. Here's the absolute biggest one you can get, and we might just go a quarter turn backwards to the second to the biggest one
that
you can get.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one out there going out there, I want, you know, give me that, what's the smallest chopper you make?
Yeah. I'll take that. Is the 9900 the only one they make now? Because that's the only one I ever hear about.
Right.
You know?
But also, that kind of goes back to a previous podcast we talked about, where that's a very much still, that's a custom guy.
Yes.
It's a custom-dominated market.
Yep, 100%.
Even the guys that are doing it, that are vertically integrated and do their own forge and those kind of things, they're still looking at, because you start talking about dry down and moisture and those kind of things. I mean,
and you know what I've noticed more than that? They might just be like the 6910 guy.
Right.
But if he's going to trade, he wants a 7950 or an 8800.
Right.
Because... Yeah. He's going to get that neighbor and that neighbor. He wants to haul ass on his own and get done, so he'll do a couple neighbors.
Right.
There's a lot of that in the chopper world lately, because everybody wants the big one. Nobody wants to be out there pussyfooting around.
Yep.
And then you end up with everybody needs a Class 80 chopper, and that's it.
Yeah, so I think that chopper marketplace to me is a very interesting one, and more and more, just from the rate, how the cattle operations are kind of moving towards this, you know, with nutritionists really being heavily involved in what's going on in these bigger operations.
Big time.
That there's a very defined way that they want that feed.
Well, and we're to the point now, nutritionists are riding in choppers.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Watching
they're
they're really paying attention.
The guy whose stuff it is, he's talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, we'll feed whatever. Talk to him. He's the one that will tell you what we want.
Yep. And that was more and more of those machines are being sold to a nutritionist.
Yeah.
Choppers are. To a nutritionist.
You're selling to the nutritionist, but he's not writing the check.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
His recommendation or her recommendation is going to go a long ways.
Absolutely. Well, that's why we're seeing the big changes, you know, why in the last 5 years KPs have changed so much.
Yeah.
You know, you got one that's like, no, I want every damn thing in that truck powder.
Right.
And then the next one is like, oh, hell, if you can run a 10-knife drum and a no KP, have at it, you know.
Yeah. Yep, so it's going to be a bigger and bigger thing. So I think there's more. Hay is always kind of been a thing, but there's more science behind the hay business now.
A lot
than there's been in a long time.
Yep, you know? The hay business has gone from zero to a lot of tech.
Yeah.
Whereas row crop has been flooded with tech all the time, and it's just commonplace, you know. Yep. I mean, now you're to the point you can get, you know, you can monitor the shit out of a baler and scales and moisture and all that, even on round balers.
Yeah.
You know, you can just keep going with tech until you're blue in the face.
Yeah, there's a, I'm trying to remember what it was, but there was a deal where you could, every bale that comes out of the baler, it knows the moisture and the weight and the content of that. So, and it then it puts it on a map, and you can see, okay, so bale number 256 is the one that you want to go pick up first because it's the driest or it's the wettest or whatever yep. you're trying to feed. So that technology
that sure is better than a can of red spray paint.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, ah, this one, that one's a little warm. Yeah. Feed that first.
Yeah, so I think a lot more transactionary stuff has taken place in the hay marketplace, or more, you know, like a guy told me, it was the first 30 years of you know, self-propelled windrowers, nobody really cared about if you went straight or not.
They made one update.
Yeah.
Cabin AC.
That's right. That's right. And then he goes, now, I mean, now, if your AB line goes out on your swather, you're probably going to stop.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Well, if you think about it, yeah. you know, especially you get like a W260 where nothing is going to stop that damn thing.
Yeah.
You can go cut 10-inch oaks, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't drive that thing 15 mile an hour.
Yeah.
And have any kind of, and not have skips and all that.
Yeah.
So I get it, yeah. you know, with that side of it.
Yeah. And it's all come back down to the production efficiency
you're, of what you're doing. When you're in the high production world, yeah. it don't matter if it's hay or corn.
Right.
Yep. They rely on the same things to accomplish the task.
Exactly right.
They got to have the tech to be able, and you have to.
Right.
You can't drive a chopper, you know, what you can. Mm-hmm. You can drive anything. Let me back that up. Sorry, Father. But if you're out there and the custom world is go, 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 go. Efficient, yeah. efficient, efficient, efficient. They have to have that to up their efficiency.
Yeah.
I will say that as a guy who's not into wires and switches, I fully, fully believe they have to have it.
Yeah.
I will say you can plant with markers on an X-Acta-merge at 9.5 mile an hour, a hell of a lot easier than you're going to drive that swather in a circle, one circle at 13 mile an hour,
yeah.
any day.
I'll agree. Totally agree with that. Because I'll be honest with you,
So there you go. Hey guys,
yeah.
you need the auto steer worse.
Yeah.
there's a plug for you.
There you go. Yeah, that's definitely a thing, because now you're looking at if you can save 30 minutes of field. And you extrapolate that across the day, I mean, you might be able to pick up one or two more fields.
Absolutely.
Because of that. Now, all of a sudden, you're picking up one or two more fields in a day. Next thing you know, you've got 10 or 15 fields done more in a seven-day period than you would have done normally. So,
right. And if you're on a circle, you're in high volume.
Right.
Right. And your WR9980, whatever the hell it is, or W260, is going to eat anything you put in front of it,
right.
okay? They're going to eat it, and they will go as fast as you can sit in the seat,
right?
Okay?
Yep.
If you can pick up, you know, do the math, per circle, and it takes those guys no time to put down a circle, but you take a full 120 to 130 size circle, 13 mile an hour, and are you doing 14.5 on your header? 14, 13.5, mm-hmm. how truly big is your gap?
Right.
You dial that in, and you're not steering it, and you're hauling ass, you start adding that up, that every 6 inches that you can keep that much more in that head off that next pass.
Oh, yeah.
Makes there you go,
difference.
Man.
Makes a world of difference. So. Yeah, so good stuff, man. So good stuff to use while iron, plenty of things going on. I would say that I'd like to pitch out a deal of the day on a swather or a baler, but
we don't have any.
So,
keep your eyes on the ads, and if you see something, call.
Yeah, absolutely. So, folks, want to reach out to you, get more information about what it is that you can offer, and what's the best way to do that?
Call or text me 308-760-1193. Also, pretty active on the Ag Twitterverse, and I am at @AaronFintail. At Twitter.
Right on.
Or on Twitter.
On Twitter, yes. Yeah. So, not at Twitter.
That'd at be... Aaron Fintel at Twitter.com.
I'm Casey Seymour. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's where you find the latest editions of the Moving Iron podcast, as well as any blogs I have posted. So, also go over to MovingIronLLC.com, and you can find the entire volume of Moving Iron LLC podcast, as well as every blog post, I think, that I've ever written. I think it's there.
If only those volumes were leather bound and smelled of rich mahogany.
That would be, it'd be way cooler, wouldn't it? Way cooler. But also, when you're at the MovingIronLLC.com website, make sure you go up to the navigation arrow, navigation box, and click on the Moving Iron Summit, and that's where you'll find all of the information about what's going on there, from speakers, agendas, hotel reservations, how to get registered, all those cool things. A lot of good information there. Great places to put faces with names, as well as get the latest information about what's going on in the industry. So with that, I am Casey Seymour with Aaron Fennell. Let's go move some iron, folks. Out.
You want to have a meaningful, competitive advantage to help sell more equipment. Whether you represent the sales, parts, or management department of an implement dealership, there's a surprising amount of complexity when it comes to tire, wheel, and track technology. Let Axon worry about that so you can get back to supporting your customers. Axon has leveraged years of experience to create a streamlined process that gives you a proven path to help today's grower and sell more equipment. The roots of their organization go back almost 100 years to the invention of the rubber tractor tire. Supporting agriculture is the number one driver of Axon, from product development through sales and service. To find more or become an Axon dealer, head over to axontire.com.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find us here. Moving.